यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरावन चारे यमुना तीरावन चारे जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ओं नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। चैप्टर 3 ऑफ कैंटो 8 टेक्स्ट 3। यस्मिन्निदं यतश्चेदं येनेदं य इदं स्वयं योस्मात् परमसाच्च परस् तं प्रपद्ये स्वयं भुवं यस्मिन् इदं यतश्चेदं येनेदं य इदं स्वयं योस्मात् परस्माच्च परस् तं प्रपद्ये स्वयं भुवं यस्मिन्निदं यतश्चेदं येनेदं य इदं स्वयं Yosmat parasmaccha paras tam prapadye svayam bhuvam. Ladies, please. Yasmin, the basic platform on which Idam, the universe rests. Yataha, the ingredients from which Cha and Idam, the cosmic manifestation is produced. Yena, by whom Idam, this cosmic manifestation is created and maintained. Yaha, he who, Idam, this material world, Swayam, is himself. Yaha, he who, Asmat, from the effect, this material world, Parasmat, from the cause, Cha, and paraha, transcendental or different, tam, unto him, prapadye, I surrender, svayam bhuvam, unto the supreme self-sufficient. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The supreme Godhead is the supreme platform on which everything rests, the ingredient by which everything has been produced, and the person who has created and is the only cause of this cosmic manifestation. Nonetheless, he is different from the cause and the result. I surrender unto him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is self-sufficient in everything. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text 4, the Lord says, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but everything rests upon my energy, just as an earthen pot rests on the earth. The place where an earthen pot rests is also earth. Then again, the earthen pot is manufactured by a potter whose body is a product of earth. The potter's wheel with which the pot is made is an expansion of earth, and the ingredients from which the pot are made are also earth. As confirmed in the Shruti Mantra, Yato va imani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivanti, yat prayanti abhisam vishanti. The original cause of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, And after being annihilated, everything enters into him. Prakritim yanti mahamikam. Thus the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra or Lord Krishna, is the original cause of everything. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita 5.1. The Lord is the cause for everything, but there is no cause for him. Sarvam khalavidam brahma, matsthani sarvabhutani achaham teshovastitah. Although he is everything, his personality is different from the cosmic manifestation. Om ajnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamahyam dadati svapadantikam vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the first of all, today, according to our Vaishnava calendar, it is the disappearance day of Baladev Vidyabhushan. It is also the appearance day, I think, of Ganga Mata Goswamini. I have two very amazing persons that we'll hear a little about in the next, 45 minutes or less. In this verse, the first three lines, before I say anything, Gajendra has just begun his prayers, okay? Have you noticed anything peculiar about his prayer so far? He has spoken two verses, yesterday's I guess and today's. Anything peculiar or particular you've noticed? Maybe I'll hint. Do you know who he is calling upon? Who he is praying to? Lord Narayan. Does he say anywhere, Narayan? No. But if you're praying to Krishna, you say, Krishna, help me. Like Draupadi said, hey Govinda, hey Madhava. Gajendra's prayers are unique in this sense, that he is not identifying who he is praying to. In none of his verses, call out the Lord. He says, Om Namo Bhagavate, but he doesn't say Vasudevaya, Narayana, he just says, Om Namo Bhagavate. So his prayers, they are considered very eloquent, but not the super like that, because his prayers are sort of vague in one sense. Okay? He's calling out to God, or he's calling out to someone in a very indirect way. He uses most of what we call secondary aspects of God, like the omnipotent one, the omnipresent one, the most powerful, the cause of all causes. But he never says, O Krishna, O Narayana, help me. That's unique, you will find through the entire prayers. He doesn't call out Lord Vishnu particularly. Actually, if you notice carefully, in his prayer yesterday and today, it may even apply to Lord Shiva. It may even apply to Lord Brahma in one sense. Even today's verse. In one sense, today's verse applies to Lord Brahma, also to Lord Shiva. So the first three lines are with the words ye or yena. That's why the first three lines are all starting with the y. Yasmin, yena, yenedam, yoha. It says he who, that personality who. But he never says Narayan. Prabhupada helps us that it's Lord Narayan. We know it was Lord Narayan, Krishna, who flew on Garuda to come and help him. But his prayers are very indirect. So first three lines are calling out to that person who. A little digression. When we study Prabhupada's books, we understand that God's names fall in two major categories. Right? One category is called primary names, and second category is called secondary names. The secondary names identify God according to his godhood, such as Allah, Yahweh, God, the most powerful, the omnipresent, the omnipotent, the cause of all causes, etc. These are all called secondary names. They are in relation to God's, godhood. They don't talk so much about his personal nature necessarily. And the primary names talk about God in terms of his relationships with his devotees. Kishore Kishori or Damodar, Yashodananda, Radha Madhava, Kunja Vihari, Gopijana Vallabha, Girivaradhari. They're all names of Krishna in relation to his devotees or his activities particularly. Something that's abstract, the omnipresent, the omnipotent, to say that their activities is not so easy. That omnipresent Lord is performing some activities. Our brains can't grasp it so easily. So his particular personality and activities, his devotees, his relationships, his all these things that he does. So the primary names give a sense of more intimacy as a person. Like, I'm going to make everything so mundane for a moment. Like the President of the United States is called POTUS, POTUS, President of the United States. So when we say POTUS, we know who we're referring to. We all can say such and such, Barack Obama. Right? It's the same person. But how you refer to him is very different. The moment you say POTUS, very important. The President of the United States. You say Barack Obama. Some may call him Barack. His wife may call him with a more intimate name, whatever that is. It's the same person, it's just that the distance from him or the level of intimacy is different. When we say POTUS, he is somewhere there, inaccessible, the very powerful, whoever. But his buddies may slap him on his back and say, hey, Barack, whatever. Same person, but there's a lot more intimacy. So Gajendra's prayers are calling to that Supreme Lord. He never says Lord Narayan anywhere. So in that spirit, these first three lines give us a sense of who he is calling out. First he says, Yasminidam Yatashchaidam. This entire material creation is resting on that person. Yenidam cha idam swayam. And this person is the only creator of this entire cosmic manifestation. And then he says, Yo asmat, parasmat, chaparas. And he who is transcendental to this world and to that world as well. Krishna's transcendental to the transcendental world. What does that mean? That he is not just beyond matter, and he's not just that he is spiritual, but he's the personality of Godhead, the origin of even the Vaikuntha realm. He's the source of even the spiritual world, which also indicates that Krishna has a unique identity. Although he's the source of everything, he has his own identity. The common Mayavada example is, you take a piece of paper, you shred it into small pieces, and that paper is everywhere. Where is the original paper? That doesn't make sense, because paper is a mundane thing that once you shred, the original paper goes away. But according to Ishopanishad, the Supreme Personality of God, it is He from whom unlimited complete units emanate, but He Himself remains the complete whole. Once Srila Madhvacharya was challenged. There's a famous view of the impersonalists. You know this one. When a drop of ocean water enters the ocean, what happens to the drop? It ceases to exist. It becomes the ocean. Right? That's their view. How can a drop become an ocean? They cannot explain. Because a drop is this much and the ocean is that much. What they mean to say is the drop mixes in the ocean such that the drop doesn't have its own identity anymore. So once Madhvacharya was challenged. There were two cups of water. And the person mixed these two cups of water and he said, can you tell me where the two cups of water are? There are no two cups of water anymore. And Madhvacharya challenged him. No, there are two cups of water right here. Because you take one cup and you make another cup and you mix it, you don't get one cup of water, you get two cups of water. You can't identify which cup they belong to, but there's still two cups of water. You understand? It doesn't become one cup of water. So that's what his challenge was. And that Mayavadi was defeated because there are two cups of water. Our philosophy, which is very important to understand, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught and what Vyasadeva teaches in the Bhagavatam is simultaneous oneness and difference. Krishna is the source of everything. So he is within creation, but he also maintains his own identity. Never at any time does Krishna's identity go away. But he's there in every atom of creation at the same time, simultaneously one and different. This whole philosophical piece is discussed in detail in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes 9.4 for us. And he says, he talks about the simultaneous oneness and difference. So one way to understand simultaneous oneness and difference in our practical life is, as my spiritual master says, that everything in our experience falls only into two categories, Krishna and Krishna's, that which belongs to Krishna. There is no third category. Everything is Krishna or Krishna's. That's it. There's no third category. And then to identify who he is calling upon, he says, Tam Prapadye, that person who is the source of everything, on who everything rests, and he who is transcendental to everything, unto him I offer my surrender. Prapadye Swayam Bhuvam. Swayam means self or by one's own. And bhuvam means existing on one's own. We cannot say we're all existing on our own. Correct? We are dependent on nature. We need air. We need water. We need energy in terms of food. We need appreciation. We need love. We need all these things to be alive. If a person has a lot of air, a lot of food, but no love, can they survive? What do you think?
No.
So many rich people who have all the facilities, but they don't have any love, they commit suicide. Not only rich, anyone. If they don't have any love, they commit suicide. Or it's not worth living anymore. That's why you see when there are heartbroken lovers, the first thing that they talk about is giving up their life. Oh, what's the use of living anymore? So we are dependent on things outside of ourselves, we think, to survive. But Swayambhuva, Krishna is self-sufficient. He doesn't need anything. He's self-sufficient. Now, Brahma is also called Swayambhuva. Swayambhuva, Narada, Shambhu. When the list of Mahajans, the great persons are spoken, Lord Brahma is also called Swayambhu. Swayambhu means one who comes into existence on his own. He doesn't need mother and father. For us to come into existence, mom and dad had to get together. It was not possible otherwise for us to show up. So Swayambhu means he is not caused by some other person. He is the cause of everything. But it's still indirect. Beautiful prayers, indirect. So he's starting from that. And interestingly, what happens as the pastime proceeds, because it is vague as to who he is calling upon, it is vague in that sense from his side, but from the side of all the other personalities that are hearing his prayer, because previously we read, right? They've been fighting for 1,000 years. All the demigods have come because they're watching this fight going on. Remember? And when he's calling out, oh, help me, he who is beyond this creation, please help me. None of the demigods come. Because they look at each other. Is he calling to me? No, not me. Is he? No, not you. Even Lord Shiva is peacefully sitting in meditation. It seems the Parvati, Durga Devi, she says, oh, someone's calling you. He says, not me. Someone else. He's calling someone else. If you were to say, he who is, whatever, let's say, this phone. If someone says, he who is the owner of this phone, please come and take it. I mean, unless we are really dishonest, we wouldn't go and take it, because it's not ours. We are not being invited to take this. So Gajendra, when he calls out, all the demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they don't go for help. He's not calling us. For them it's clear. And that's why Prabhupada's purports are very clear that it is Lord Vishnu that he's addressing. This verses, when the Mayavadis read, they have a whole different understanding of this. Because it is vague, they say, oh, he's calling to Brahman. And whatever form Brahman shows up in, that's okay for them. We understand. That's why when I asked, who is he calling out to? All of us said, oh, Lord Vishnu, Narayan. Thanks to Prabhupada, we know who's the source of all sorts, of all causes. So that's this verse. And then the purport, Prabhupada talks about the earthen pot, the potter's wheel, the potter himself. So the pot is made from earth. The potter's wheel is made from wood, which is a transformation of earth. The potter himself, his whole body is a transformation of earth in a different way. So this is what the Mayavadis like very much. Oh, see, it's all earth. Everything is Brahman. Simultaneous oneness and difference. It is true that they're all transformations of earth, but each is different. We don't call the pot, when we want the pot, we don't hold the potter and bring him in. right? Or when you say, I need a pot of water, you don't take the potter's wheel and give it to someone. Here. You make a distinction. This is a pot, this is a potter's wheel, this is the potter. So although they are transformed, although they are from the same source, we use transformations. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into all these energies. They're all Him, but it doesn't mean they're all Him also. Are you confused enough? Is that right? It's important to identify that everything is Krishna, Krishna's. That's it. No third category. Nothing in between. Nothing outside of that. That's this verse. So Baladev Vidyabhushan, who's a disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is the Rasa Acharya, he wrote commentaries on the Bhagavatam from a very, very specifically, from the vantage point of Madhurya Rasa, conjugal relationship with Krishna. All his purports are, in that mood. So what happened is, a young devotee by the name Baladev, who was originally a follower of Madhvacharya, and after thoroughly studying Madhvacharya's books, as he traveled, he came and met Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And when he heard Bhagavatam from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was so amazed as to how someone can have that kind of insight into Krishna's mind. If you read Bhagavad Gita commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or the Bhagavatam commentaries, when we read them, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes what Krishna is thinking. That is so amazing that he has access to Krishna's mind. Krishna was thinking like this. Well, that would be fascinating, isn't it? But what Krishna was thinking. That is with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he studied under him. Then with time, there was a major crisis in the Gaudiya Vaishnav history. Actually, Gaudiya Vaishnavism has gone through many crises. This was the time, there was one of those crises. And the crisis was that all of the different traditions in India at that time, they rejected Gaudiya Vaishnavism as it's not bona fide, it's not authentic. And their reasons for why Gaudiya Vaishnavism was not authentic was because that there was no teacher in the Gaudiya Vaishnav line who wrote commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam or wrote commentaries on the Brahma Sutras, the Vedanta Sutra, not Bhagavatam, on Vedanta Sutra. If you are according to them, if you are a self-respecting line, you should have your teacher's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Ramanujacharya wrote, Madhvacharya wrote, Shankaracharya wrote, they all wrote. Only in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, no one wrote commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. Why? So Chaitanya was there. He could have written, Rupa Goswami could have written. Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ishwara Puri or Madhavendra Puri could have written, but none of them wrote. Because they all accepted that Vyasadeva's writing of Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authentic, bona fide commentary on Vedanta Sutra. We don't need another one. We don't need another hero. That was a song like that. Anyway, we don't need another Bhagavatam. Isn't that what the Bhagavatam says right in the beginning? Why do you need any other book if you have Bhagavatam? Kimva Parair Ishvara. If you have Bhagavatam, you don't need another scripture. So the Gaudiya Vaishnavas followed that. But with time, these other persons, especially the Ramanadis, which were like a branch of Ramanujacharya Sampradaya, said, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, not authentic. There are some sentimentalists, Radha Krishna and all that, Vrindavan stuff, not sentimentalists. No solid philosophy. So all the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan and all those places, Jagannath Puri, they came crying to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. You're the only one of this lineage who's here and we all accept you as the best. We would like you to please do something. And this was in Jaipur, where the king of Jaipur, in his court, this discussion was happening. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, oh, I'm too aged. I'm very old right now. I can't travel and forget about debating with anyone at this age. It's just not worth it. I can't. So Baladev, who was a young man, he requested Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, if you allow me on your behalf as your servant, I may go. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave him his blessings and said, please, what you can. So when he went to Jaipur, he was confronted by all these Ramanadis that said, oh, not authentic, sorry, you don't have commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So he presented all the different aspects from Srimad Bhagavatam. And they said, sorry, we don't, not good enough for us. So Baladev Vidyabhushan in that heat of the moment said, all right, I will write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra for you in 1 month's time or some very short time. No one can write anything like that. And they all said, oh really? Then you're up for challenge. Confirm. Write this commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Now you know, if you see Arjuna's life, Arjuna makes all these promises that he doesn't care about really, and actually puts Krishna in a lot of anxiety, because the Pandavas are just known to be free-spirited. They make all these promises. I will kill Jayadratha or I'll enter fire tomorrow night. Hey, Arjuna, what are you saying? So there's one such situation we heard recently that among the Pandavas, Sahadev, the fifth one, was an excellent astrologer. Excellent astrologer. So Duryodhan goes to Sahadev. I heard the story recently from Gauranga Prabhu. He goes to Sahadev and he asks him, hey Sahadev, you're so good with predictions. Can you tell me what I need to do so I can defeat you Pandavas in the war? And Sahadev says, okay, let me look at my calculations. Oh, Duryodhan, when Amavasya, the new moon day, arrives on such and such day, if you perform this particular fire sacrifice, all good results will come to you. You will win the battle against us. Duryodhan was like, ha ha, finally, yes, I will prepare for this new moon day, for this fire yagya, this fire sacrifice, so I can defeat the Pandavas. Now Krishna came to know about it and he said, Sahadev, such a simple hearted fellow, why did you tell them this? Sahadev said, he asked me, I told him. So Sahadev was okay, Krishna was in anxiety. Well, how do I do this now? It's not okay for the Kauravas, for Duryodhan to win this battle. But Krishna decided to do one thing. So the day before the actual new moon day, Krishna sat down and started performing a particular fire yagya for his ancestors. Okay? Duryodhan was asked to do Kala, Mahakala yagya or something. So Krishna sat down and started performing a fire yagya for his ancestors. Now that yagya is done only on new moon day. Okay? But Krishna was doing it on the 14th day. Swaha, swaha. So he got a few Brahmins. They were like Krishna's almanac. He didn't check with Jitendra Prabhu, or you know, the Panchanga is not proper. What is he doing? But anyway, he's asking us to do the mantra, so we'll do it. And because some Brahmanas were doing it, other Brahmanas came and said, something's wrong, it's not the new moon day, somehow Krishna's doing it. Okay, we'll also sit and perform this yagya with him. So they all knew it was the wrong day, but they were all chanting the mantras as if it is new moon day. Swaha, swaha. So thousands of Brahmanas are gathered. And because they are chanting the names of all the sages, of their ancestors, and saying, today is Amavasya, today is Amavasya, you know, the new moon day. Up there, Suryadev and Somadev, sun and moon, the deities of sun and moon, they were confused. They looked at their calendars. Hey, new moon day is tomorrow. What's wrong with Krishna? So the sun god went to ask the moon god, is today new moon day? You said, I don't know, I'm confused. Actually, it was supposed to be tomorrow, but Krishna's chanting all these mantras that it is today. So they said, let's go meet him and solve this issue. So sun and moon both came. The deity, Suryadev and Chandradev or Somadev, they came, stood in front of Krishna and said, we are sorry to interrupt your fire yagya, but we have a confusion. When is this new moon day? According to us, it's tomorrow. What's going on? Krishna said, what is the definition of a new moon? It is when the sun and the moon are in a straight line between the earth. Right? That's when you can't see the moon. Because the sun is on that side, then there is moon, and because of the light of the sun, you can't see the moon. That's what new moon day is. And then as the sun moves, you see the phases of the moon. It's called waxing and waning. Correct? We know this in science classes, right? So he says, when the sun and the moon are standing in a straight line from my perspective, as far as I'm concerned, today is Amavasya. You're standing here. Krishna is very tricky, right? So he said, you're standing here. It's the new moon day. And so they said, yeah, you're right. So Krishna did all the yagya for the Pandavas to win this war. Next day, Duryodhan did swaha, swaha, and it had no effect. Because it was not the new moon day. The calendar got changed by Krishna's grace. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan said, I will have a commentary written for you. And then he went to Govindaji temple, rather Govinda temple in Jaipur. It was in Vrindavan at that time. Oh, they had already come to Jaipur. Sorry, the deities had already come. So in Jaipur, he went to Govindaji temple, fell flat in front of the deity, said, I made this promise, but now only you have to make it come true. Because I don't know how to write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It's not possible. Only you can make it come true. So he sat there at the temple. And it's described that as he was offering this prayer, the pujari brought a garland from the deities and gave it to him. So he took that as a sign that Govinda, he will help me. And Govindaji came to him in a dream and said, from tomorrow, you start writing. You just write, I will dictate you exactly what the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra is. I said, oh, sure. Next day, he sat with his pen, with his whatever rod and palm leaves. He didn't have Mac or Windows or anything, no word processor. He sat there. Govindaji came and sat in front of him and told him, Vedanta Sutra, first verse, this is the commentary. And he wrote the whole book down. Went to the Ramanadis and said, here is our commentary, the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And they were shocked. What? So quickly? This is humanly impossible. So they checked if there were any mistakes, if it had plagiarized from someplace. you know, without any references, as we do from India primarily. We never know how to do citations. So when we used to write our paper, we'd blindly plagiarize everything and give our paper to our teacher. So they checked if it was plagiarized. They never heard anything like this. They never heard a commentary on Vedanta Sutra of this nature. Like, how did you write this? He said, look at the title. And he had named it Govinda Bhashya. Govinda Bhashya means the speech of Govinda, as spoken by Govinda. So he said, he spoke, I wrote. So very, very amazing acharya. Prabhupada, if you open Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the very first page, he dedicates the Bhagavad Gita to Baladev Vidyabhushan. Because he took Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary and styled his entire Bhaktivedanta purports around Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary. A very fascinating personality. There is Ganga Mata Goswamini. So I like to visualize things, so let's visualize something. Okay? In 2016, in some parts of the world, women still have what we call secondary place. But in a progressive country like America, Europe, continents like Europe, women have a very progressive place. Women's rights, women pretty much do anything and more than men can do in terms of different professions. Flying planes, driving trucks, whatever. You know, women are right there. So in today's world, if we say a particular woman achieved something, you know, very soon we might have a woman president for this country. So we may not be too shocked by, oh, some woman accomplished some very fantastic thing today. But let's go back 500 years, or 400 years. And let's go back to highly ultra-conservative India, where the Brahmins and all that were like in power. And so the role of women was very, very well identified and even confined to a large extent. And in that setting, Ganga Mata Goswamini rose to such prominence. So it's very fascinating how she was able to do so. And she was not like an achiever, I need to become such and such. It was not like that. She was born to a king by the name Naresh Narayan Dev. And her name was Sachi Devi. So as a little princess, in her home, there was a deity of Krishna. So right from her childhood, she had this intense attraction to Krishna. And she would hear every day from Srimad Bhagavatam. And she would hear how the residents of Vrindavan, they accepted Krishna as everything. So when she came of age, and her father as the king said, oh, I need to get you married. She said, I'm already married. No, when did that happen? Oh, I'm already married to Krishna. This is it. No more marriage for me. So her father was a little concerned. This kind of thing is never heard before. What will others say? Said, no, this is it. And she was so dedicated to serving her deity. So the king relented. All right, you don't have to get married. Fine. Which is very uncommon. No? Please try to understand. It's not like today's stuff. It's very, very uncommon. Especially in conservative India. If a girl is not married, then they get very agitated about it. Or at least they were agitated about it at that time. Still he said, okay, that's fine. So she became a Brahmacharini princess. I don't know how that is. But anyway, Brahmacharini princess that only worshipped Krishna. And as she lived like that, she met Haridas Pandit, who was a great spiritual master in the Gaudiya line. She took initiation from him. And he said, you see, you're a princess. Now, for you to live like a devotee of Krishna, you can't live in royal opulence. You have to learn to live simply. She said, no problem. And she moved out of the palace and moved into a little ashram-like place. And she chanted the same way that Haridas Thakur chanted, 192 rounds every day. And Haridas Pandit said, but you can't live, you know, since you're not living in the palace, it's not like you can have a little place where you cook for yourself and all. It's not like that. You have to go out and beg for food. Madhukari. She said, no problem. She wore one piece of cloth. She would go from household to household and beg. May I please get something to eat? Imagine a princess begging. And that's how she lived, chanting 192 rounds without falling asleep or dozing off every day. And then she lived in such a simple, life that very soon her body became fully emaciated. All the bones were sticking out, all the flesh went away, and just busy in chanting. She was such a wonderful devotee who lived in Vrindavan. Every day as she was chanting, she would go and visit all the places of Krishna's pastimes. Sevakunj at 1716 West Lawn. Then she would go visit Radhakund. She would go and visit Vamshivat, where Krishna would do his Rasalila, Rasasthali. Like that, every day she would walk to all these wonderful places of Krishna's pastimes, chanting and just remembering Krishna and hearing from the Brajavasis. Then, today is also Ganga Sagar Mela Day, right? In our calendar? I think so. There's a particular festival for Ganges. So we're from Vrindavan. She was given the instruction by her spiritual master, go to Jagannath Puri and live there. So she came from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent 24 years there. So she came to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. And that house was in a very dilapidated condition because with time things had degenerated. So she cleaned it up, fixed it, made it look very nice again, and that became her place of worship and devotional service. So as she lived like that in Jagannath Puri, one day on Ganga Sagar Mela Day, where they worship Ganges River, she had this desire in her heart. Oh, how I wish I could be, I could take a bath in the Ganges River today. Oh, how I wish. That night, in her dream, actually it's not a dream, that night what happened when she was resting, she was asleep, the Ganges River started to flow from Lord Jagannath's lotus feet. And that river took on more volume and speed and came to Ganga Sachi Devi's house and lifted her and her bed and flowed back into Jagannath temple. And she was drawn in, those waters brought her right into this, what's called Sanctum Sanctorum, right where the altar of Lord Jagannath is. And so she woke up with all these waters bringing her right to in front of Jagannath in the middle of the night. Imagine that, huh? If ever Krishna or Kishori bring us like that, that would be fantastic. Anyway, it won't happen for me, but anyway, it happens to Ganga Mata Goswami. So next morning when the pujaris opened the door for the temple room, it was all with Ganges water and Ganga Mata Goswami there. And they thought she's come to steal Jagannath's jewelry. So they immediately incarcerated her. They told her, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say will be used against you at the court of law. And put her in the police car and took her to the jail. That night, Lord Jagannath appeared simultaneously in the king's dream and the head pujari's dream. And both of them got chastised and rebuked like anything by Lord Jagannath. How dare you? How dare you take my devotee, this wonderful Ganga Mata Goswamini, from right in front of my eyes and put her in jail? She is a very special devotee. Return her back to my altar right now. The king got up with a little shock. The pujari, ran quickly. Mataji, please, they let her go. So from that day on, her name became Ganga Mata Goswami. Because Lord Jagannath particularly went and brought her to her. So that's how she lived. And then there are other wonderful pastimes. So very, very, and then she rose to such prominence that she became an initiating spiritual master. That she would give Diksha. The king from the local place, he came to her and fell at her feet and became initiated by her. So imagine in that kind of environment, in that India, that was so ultra, for Jagannath Puri, right? Talk of conservatism even now. In 2016, Jagannath Puri is so conservative that they will not allow any non-Hindu to enter the temple. You're not allowed. You have to stand outside. If you go to Jagannath Puri, you stand outside the temple, you offer your prayer, and that's about it. They have one Jagannath near the door just to get us look and peek and say, ah, okay, I see Jagannath. You can't enter. If you're not Hindu, you can't get in. Many of us have tried different things, but can't get in. Even someone who's Hindu cannot get in. Stoka Krishna and Manasi Ganga's daughter, Neha, she's very much Hindu. They didn't allow her to go in. They quickly, as soon as they see Kantimala, they say, ISKCON, out. Because ISKCON takes all non-Hindus and makes them Brahmins, right, out. But they ask you, what's your Gotra? Gotra is in your lineage. What particular sage are you descending from? So all of us who have taken initiation in Prabhupada's movement, our Gotra is Achyuta Gotra. Okay, next time you go somewhere to a Hindu temple or some place, a Vishnu temple, and they ask you which Gotra, you should say Achyuta Gotra. So we are very proud to be Achyuta Gotra. Yeah, Achyuta Gotra. In India, if you say Achyuta Gotra, it means you're an orphan. Oh, okay. No other Gotra means Achyuta Gotra. Fine. We're all Achyuta Gotras. And we are happy to be orphans because we're happy to be part of Krishna's orphanage. Because Krishna's our father and mother and everything. That's fine. We're very happy about it. But if you say Achyuta Gotra, they're like, oh, poor fellow. So they'll ask you, what Gotra? So you say Achyuta Gotra. I try to pick up an Indian accent because if you say Achyuta, they're like, out. So you have to change your color, change your accent, and hopefully Lord Jagannath will take you in. Anyway, the point is, even today, Jagannath Puri is so conservative. So imagine how it was at that time. And in that era, she became an initiating spiritual master. Ganga Mata Goswamini. Okay, 8:30. Any comments, questions? Raktak Prabhu, how to get into Jagannath Puri temple? Don't even ask. If I tell you a story, it will be very shocking. What I did 2 years ago, 2010. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna. Do you think that there will be any possibility that they will change?
I wrote a letter. Let's see what Shankaracharya says.
Anytime soon?
I wrote a letter to Shankaracharya. No, I'm kidding. Of course not. Shankaracharya is like, who are you? I don't know. You want to hear a story of how we tried to smuggle someone into Jagannath Puri temple? Do you remember? You were there? Oh, I did something. I hope Jagannath is not upset. In 2010, my spiritual master took the youth to... You were there, right? To Jagannath Puri Yatra. One of my god sisters, who's a very close friend of mine, her name at that... Was she initiated by that time? No, her name was Alejandra. Alejandra, she's from Venezuela. Very, very sweet devotee. Until she speaks, you can tell that she's quite Indian. Her skin color, the way she behaves is very Indian-like. Only when she speaks, she has this Spanish accent. You say, oh, she's not from India. So we were all that evening planning on going to take darshan. I was going to go with Prahlad, and the word spread around. Nityananda Pran Prabhu is going, and suddenly with like a whole group of us. You were there when we went to the beach, remember? That's also how it started. It was just a few of us, then it became a big group. So Alejandro was there. I think her name is Anusuya now. So she also came up, and I said, we're going to the temple. She said, oh, you know, like a little disappointed. I told her, come along, we'll take you inside. She said, are you sure? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. So we put that little red dot on her forehead, covered her head, and I told her, don't open your mouth, don't talk. One. Second, don't make eye contact with any of the guards. Okay? And we all decided to go as a group, you know, cluster, and we put her right in the middle of it, so no one will notice her. We were almost 15 of us or something. And we told Prahlad and other kids, don't say anything. And if someone says, hey, hey, calls you, don't pay attention, just keep walking. And the third thing was, if any of us gets caught, others, keep walking. It's okay to abandon, just keep walking. Otherwise, everyone will get kicked out, right? So we put Anusuya right in the middle, all of us circled around her, and we walked. And we went to the main gate. That's where they stop everyone. Nothing happened. We moved in. We're like, wow, that's really good. Then there was this flight of steps to go up. We went all the way up. Once you cross that, it's okay. Some guard who was near the top of the stair said, hey! He was calling someone. And Anusuya, she looked up because she was nervous. She thought she was being called upon. She looked at him. And somehow he latched on. He said, yes, yes, you. And we were all like, keep moving. You know, the places, we shouldn't have done it. But anyway, keep moving. The guy said, hey. Others moved and she just stopped. She shouldn't have stopped. So we all moved and now she's all exposed, right? So he walked up to her and he asked her in Hindi, what is your gotra? She looked at me. I turned back thinking, what do I do now? I looked at her. She looked at me. I said, turn around, walk away. So she didn't respond to him. She turned around and she walked. So the guard was in pursuit. No, stop. Usually what happens if they catch someone, then they chastise like anything. And nowadays I heard that they shut down the temple, they shut down darshan, they wash the entire temple to remove the contamination by a foreigner, a non-Hindu. So she was walking fast and he was in hot pursuit. Somehow she ran out of the temple. So he left her because there's so many other people trying to get in this, that. So he put her. But it was a horrendous experience. So, anyway, try not to do it. I shouldn't have done it. Okay, final question. I gotta stop here. I'll run to work.
Hey, Krishna, thank you for your class and thank you for all the stories. I didn't know that about Govinda, but I see, I always see the book and I didn't know what it meant. So, you were mentioning Ramana Maharaj, Krishna and Krishna's, everything's Krishna. So that reminded me of a nice quote. It says, detachment is not that you shouldn't own anything, but that nothing should own you. And we could see that, you know, we don't really own anything, like our phone or our TV or our computer. They own us usually. And we could see that it's described that Krishna is not owned by anything, but he is owned by, we were mentioning that last story, he's owned by the love of his devotees. And so, my question is related to the point that in the Gita, Krishna says he's equal to everyone. And sometimes it's a common thing that devotees may go through, or aspiring devotees, to at least get initiated. I'm thinking is that, you know, we hear that Krishna is equal to everyone. And like, for example, sometimes you know, devotees who are aspiring for, like, let's say, initiation, you know, they're like, okay, I'm chanting my rounds, I'm growing longer, and then somebody, like, is who's been chanting less than them get initiated. And so we hear from Chaitanya Charitamrita that the devotee is desireless, Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Ate Vishant. And so how do we get with this tendency to think that, everything we get, basically we deserve. I mean, it's the laws of nature, but we hear that Krishna is equal to everyone, but we kind of see some inequality, but it's not necessarily true. It's, Krishna knows what lessons he needs to teach everyone. So how do we get up this tendency of thinking, oh, Krishna should be controlled by my love more than somebody else? You know, I thought he's equal to everyone. So how do we give up that tendency to compare ourselves and think that Krishna is not equal? You know, he knows exactly what's, you know, how do we give up that tendency?
So first of all, it is not true that Krishna is equal to everyone. Krishna is not equal to everyone. He is very partial. Gauranga Prabhu recently said it nicely. He said he's the supreme personality of partiality. Krishna is very, very partial. When it comes to his devotees, all rules are broken. For he is not a devotee, I mean, it's different. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, there is a verse in the 9th chapter where Krishna says, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, Name Dveshyosti Na Priya. I'm equal to everyone. There's no one who's dear to me, or there's no one that I'm envious of. So that statement is true. It is true that he is equal to everyone. The next two lines, then his heart comes out where he says, but those who love me, they're very specially dear to me. Ye bhajanti mam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. They are in me and I am in them. So our acharyas describe that the first two lines, which talk about Krishna's objectivity and Krishna's neutrality and equalness to everyone, is the Paramatma speaking. Because Paramatma is like that, everyone. And he treats everyone equally. Friend, enemy, this one, that one, animals, everyone is treated equally. Because whoever follows the laws of karma, everyone equally gets rewards and reactions according to that. The last two lines are spoken by Krishna, who's not Paramatma, who's beyond Paramatma. He says, yeah, all that rules apply, but for my devotees, I'm there. So what would not normally happen by the natural law of karma, Krishna can intervene and change that. So Krishna is not neutral in that sense. But the expertise of Krishna is such that while being partial to his devotees, he can be neutral to everyone. Now that's not easy. That only Krishna knows how to do. So when we interact with Krishna, and then each one of us is treated by Krishna differently. Actually, if you see, those who come very new to Krishna consciousness, they get mercy like anything. Those of us who've been here a little longer, we wonder, where is the juice in the Hare Krishna mantra? Where is it? I had more juice when I was chanting one round or four rounds. When I looked at some service, I was like, service, can I do? And now what I was, Gauranga Prabhu was sharing the other day, we say, oh, energy of Krishna, oh Krishna, please engage him in your service. Not me, I have enough. Engage him. Look at him. Engage him. Yeah. Engage her. Why me? Something happens. So when Krishna gives, because we honor it. When we are new, we honor that mercy very much. And after being used to it, I get mercy. I chant Hare Krishna, even without my asking. Even when I don't chant my rounds, I get service. So what's the point of chanting anyway? Too much service anyway. I don't want that. So then we forget the privilege of that service. Yeah. Will you take care of service? What? I didn't even chant my round. So much service already. I'm not afraid to chant now. Krishna, don't give me as much service. It's how we treat the privilege that's given to us. Because we become familiar with it, we tend to become casual about it. And those who are not casual, then they get severe doses of mercy, like nice. So we have to check if we are becoming casual about Krishna and what Krishna is giving us. We do tend to become casual. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for your wonderful association. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.